Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. Just getting myself organised, actually. Down here, I've opened the curtains. It's 6:15 on the 7th of September 2025. I believe today is the day they're going to do that ridiculous government alarm thing. 3 o'clock, they say. But I should be having my phone off most of the day, so don't try to call me. Or message me, indeed. Because you never know, they might trick you. You know what these people are like. I don't want the government interfering with me. Right, cup of coffee. I was hoping to sit outside. It's a nice-ish morning. I nearly got attacked by my little chair in the shed. I was going to sit in the shed. Julia's not here, so I can get up a little bit early and crack on. That's no reflection on Julia, of course. But as a result, of course, I was going to sit outside, as I say. But, of course, it's 6:15 in the morning on a Sunday morning. I thought my neighbour probably wouldn't appreciate it. So the reason I was going to do that was I just fancied having a little puff on my pipe. It's a Sunday, it's pipe smoking day. Well, I don't really need an excuse. I don't have to have a pipe. People say it's addictive. It isn't addictive. I don't know where the people get that idea from. I've been out so many days. I'm going to try to smoke my Savinelli. I've been out so many days where I haven't taken my pipe, or I've taken my pipe, I haven't even thought about it. Unlike cigarettes, in which you go, oh, gosh, I better have one. But I do, sometimes it's just quite nice. I won't go on about it in today's one because you've heard all these arguments, I'm sure. And Rachel Matthews, if you listen to her on her YouTube channel, she's been doing some experiments. I think I might need to ream this one out. See if I can find my little reamer. I was sent a reamer by Albert. I'm going to find the little thing. Here it is. Is that it? I don't know what I've done with it. What have I done with it, Albert? They're Julia's little pipes. Is it going to be the last one I look in? Of course it is. Which should have been the first one. Do you ever do that? Sorry, I'm talking to you from across the room. Do you ever do that? Do you ever go, I ought to look in that one first, but I'll work from this end. And then it turns out, of course, it was in the one that you should have looked at. So this little reamer, clever little thing, goes in the pipe. And it just scrapes off the excess carbon, I suppose you'd call it. Like that. Give it a twist. And then you end up with a pipe, you know, pretty much like new. Let me get down the bottom there. Give it a scrape. Yesterday was quite a long one, wasn't it? I'll try not to be too long today. Didn't hear anything. Nobody mentioned anything yesterday. I mean, occasionally when I say, oh, I wonder if people are listening, I'll get the odd email. And I suppose I don't really want to be plagued by emails. That's very true, just from people saying, yeah, listen. But a bit of reassurance sometimes is quite nice. It actually, I don't know why I say that, because it won't make the blind bit of difference. And what do I mean by that? It won't make the blind bit of difference. I'll still get up and do the Naked Englishman, whether people listen or not. It's cathartic for me. I don't know what it is. It's a very good thing. Now, did I clean this out? Oh, I don't know. I'm trying to have a sit down, have a nice pipe. And a natter. My pipe needs reaming. It also needs cleaning. Mm. Looking for a pipe cleaner. Now. Where, oh where, sorry about this, ladies and gentlemen, I'm usually a bit more organised. I've got myself organised with the coffee. Here's a bit of a pipe cleaner. I have got loads in the other room. I just didn't want to, I didn't want to take too long. Ah. So yes, the government's warning. So today I'm going to do a video. Oh, I've done my pipe video, by the way. I did that last night. That, I hope people will find interesting. Oh, I do need a new pipe cleaner. This is actually quite filthy. I must have smoked this for a while, put it away, and completely forgot about it. Excuse me. Something's just bloody fly. Right, let's have a slurpee. That was a genuine slurp. I'll have to go in the other room. Sorry about it. Yeah, so I'm going to do a video on sleep today. That's the idea that came to me this morning. I think a lot of people are being put into fear, haven't they? They're frightened. They're genuinely frightened about circumstances, and it plays on them, particularly at night time. So I'm in the back room now. Look at this, I've got a brand new packet. Pipe cleaners. Tapered pipe cleaners by BJ Long. I hope to put some more in the other room in a little pot somewhere. I'll do that another time. You see, I'd be useless if I tried to go outside with... this is one of my more expensive pipes. Not the most expensive pipe. But I haven't smoked it for a while, and I just fancied it. And also, I'm very pleased to have cleaned it out. It looks nice now. But let's just give it... ram the old pipe cleaner down the spout. Give it a once-over. It is important to do that if you're not a pipe cleaner. If you're not a pipe cleaner? Are you a pipe cleaner, ladies and gentlemen? If you're not a pipe smoker, you probably don't appreciate it. I don't use filters either. Some people prefer filters, some people don't. I don't take it down. That's the main thing. And because of that, I don't really need a filter. But some people who do take it down sometimes get the bits that go up the, you know, go in the spout. I don't generally. Right. I think we're there. There we go, look at that. It's good, isn't it? Sunday is a good day for pipe maintenance. One should really run, once you've had a smoke, let the pipe cool down and then give it a good clean. That's what one should really do. And not only can you clean the pipe, you know, you don't have to go mad and you don't have to spend hours on it, just give it a quick, and then, and normally I'm aware of, you know, after at least two smokes I'll give it a clean. But obviously on this occasion I must have put it away in a rush. I'm just putting it back together again. As you probably are aware, pipes can come apart so that you can pull off the stem from the bowl. Ah, that's better. If you don't clean it, then the gunk can go up the spout and it gives it a nasty taste. And nobody wants that, do they? I mean, the whole point is to enjoy the pleasure. Look at that. I just threw a little tissue which I had there across the room straight into the bin. Marvellous. This is a Savinelli, machine made, but what does it say on the bottom here? It's a Lancillotto 207 made in Italy. They are machine made, but Savinelli are a good manufacturer, and not cheap. just got my... So what am I smoking? You'll see me smoking this and talking about filming and lights, if you like that sort of thing, in the Pipe Smoking Channel. Let's have another slurp of coffee. To me, The Naked Englishman is a little quiet, little private chat with you guys, if you're interested in just waking up a bit more gently and moving into conversation. And I suppose for people who live on their own, it's quite nice, isn't it, to have a friendly voice. Whether you agree with everything I say isn't really the point. I suppose you've got to agree or have share certain philosophies that you agree with or can tolerate more than others. Otherwise, why would you tolerate listening at all? You know, that's the thing. That's what it is. And for me, it's having that little early morning cerebral thought process. And some days, as you know, if you're a regular listener, it doesn't happen. It's more a, oh, I've got to get myself ready because we're going off to do such and such, or I've got to make this video. So that's really what that is. That's really what that is. Right, I'm just stacking a pipe up now. I know it's taken me forever. Well, this is a kind of, I suppose, what, in some ways, we are always in a rush, aren't we? We're always in a rush. Now, I've probably spoken about this on videos and things, and probably spoken about this, but we are constantly in a rush. I know I can be. I can be chivying the lovely Julia along. And I used to chivy my clients a lot. When I used to do the corporate filming, I would be quick. I would work fast. And I would say to them, you know, they'd say, oh, when can we have the footage? I said, well, you can have it tomorrow. I'll do it tonight if necessary. Oh, we don't need it that quickly. Oh, okay. But if you could have it by the end of the week, yep, no problem at all. And then I would be chasing them up for, could you send me the artwork that you wanted to include in it? Can you send me the logo? Can you tell me the text? The name of the guy I interviewed, you said he had letters after his name. Can you send me those? And you'd wait. And they would want this by the end of the week. I'd filmed it, say, on a Monday or a Tuesday. I've edited it by the Tuesday or Wednesday. And then you're waiting for the final bits. And then it'll come in, you know, Friday morning. Oh, here's the stuff. I've requested it on Monday. Comes in on Friday. And then they're saying, oh, we'd like to watch, you know, can we have it by 2 o'clock? Yeah, yeah, you can. But, so I do end up chivying people a bit. Let's get this lit. Funny old life, isn't it, really? I keep blowing it out as I puff. There we go. And my tamper is just a bit of wood that I've carved. If you tamp it down, I'm very frequently losing my tamper. I infrequently lose my temper. I've found as I've got older, I'm much more tolerant of nonsense. I may not agree with it. I'm more tolerant and I'm more inclined just to walk away from argument and not worried about having the last say, you know, all that sort of rubbish. I think you realise it's a waste of time, isn't it? People like to score points on one another, but there's no point. There is no point to those points, scoring things. What have you done? Let the other one have it. That's what I always think. Well, I don't always think that. I think that now. They think they've got something over you, don't they? That's going now. How long are we doing? 14 minutes. I'm inclined to lean over today and grab a book, which is called The Making of English Towns by somebody called David Lloyd. 2,000 years of evolution, it says. And what it has is a picture on the front of this particular book. I think it's Chichester. I think it's Chichester, actually. Can't be Chichester, can it? No. When he said that, it was too busy for Chichester. Yes. It's London. It's definitely London. So chock-a-block. But the reason I said it, because I thought it had the Chichester Cross in it, but now I can see there's a viaduct in there. There's the edge of the Thames. It's a section of London that's just crammed, and it's crammed with people. I don't know why I said Chichester. So, and there, funny enough, I opened that up, and there is a picture of Chichester. The paltry, oh, Salisbury. Huh, there you go. What do I know? I know nothing. I've opened this up at random. I like these books on towns and things. I used to read loads. I've got loads of them about houses, how houses were built, types of houses, towns, villages, philosophy on it, observations. I like all that. This book, I've obviously read it or read part of it. Let's read a bit. This is chapter 8, called Institutions and Public Buildings. Interesting. I'm very much inclined to go to this bit. Hospitals. What does it say about these things? The old, infirm and poor, including the travelling poor, were served in the Middle Ages by hospitals. The word had a wider meaning than today. They were, at first, usually quasi-monastic, with a master or warden and a staff of brothers, who might be clerics or laymen. Early medieval hospitals were often in the form of churches. The occupants lived in the structural nave, perhaps in lightly partitioned bed spaces or cubicles, such as remain in the large 14th century St. John's Hospital at Bruges, while the chancel was used for services. The inmates could be given the sacraments in a consecrated building without going outside. How about that? Question is, how much of this is true? St. Mary's Hospital at Chichester, built about 1290, retains that form, except that miniature one-story houses of brick, each with a hearth and chimney, were built within the hall in the 17th century. They are still occupied by old people. The 14th century building at St. Catherine's Hospital in Ledbury, just a nave and chancel, remains, though superseded by Victorian almshouses nearby. What later became the Royal Garrison Church at Portsmouth, now partly roofless, was originally a hospital founded in 1215 as a Domus Dei, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, Mason Dieu, or God's House, like several others so-called, in ports. Oh, I see. There were examples at Dover and Southampton, intended primarily but not wholly for poor travellers, especially those on pilgrimages, before joining or after leaving ships. It's interesting how things have changed and things have been turned into commerce. You know, you could stay in a church, poor, probably cost you nothing. Other medieval hospitals, especially the later ones, were built in courtyard form. The most splendid is St. Cross at Winchester. It is splendid, actually. I've been there several times. Richly founded in 1136 by a bishop and augmented in the 15th century by another. It has a superb church of the earlier date and domestic buildings of the latter period. Examples of small hospitals, among many, with a courtyard plan are the tiny and delightful Wenyard's Hospital at Exeter of 1436, but embellished by the Victorians, and Ford's Hospital at Coventry, with small timber-framed courtyard, founded by a merchant in 1519, restored after bomb damage, and it continues its original purpose. Now, looking at this book, I would say it's probably 1980s. So I'm going to have a look at it. It says here, to Geoffrey with my love, Gordon. I think that's Gordon. Xmas, 94. Just written on the inside. But David Lloyd, first published 1984. So there we are. Although this edition is 92. But I said it was published in the 80s, didn't I? Many hospitals were closed at the Reformation because of the monastic connections, such as the one at St. Leonard's Hospital in York, now a fragmentary ruin. Fortunately, St. Bartholomew's Hospital in London survived as an institution, despite its monastic association. It's now housed in the 18th century. What do you mean it's now housed in the 18th century? It's now housed in the 18th... It's housed back in time. Oh, is it? How did that work? It is now housed in 18th century and later buildings on the original site. Add a word, the whole thing changes its meaning. St. Thomas's Hospital, originally in Southwark, also survived. It moved to new buildings opposite the Houses of Parliament in the 19th century. Now, wait a minute. Finally, I see a picture of Chichester Cross, which is what I kept seeing, but it wasn't Chichester Cross. There's one more chat. There's one more paragraph. I'll read that and then we'll move on from this. And I will let you get on with your day. There's a picture here. We've been there. Hungerford Almshouses and School, Corsham in Wiltshire. Been there. Parked right outside it. Lovely building. Right, this last paragraph. Hundreds of hospitals and almshouses, in modern terms, old people's homes, were founded in Tudor, Stuart, and Georgian times. Their buildings, sometimes modernised and still used for their original purpose, sometimes converted to other uses, are found in towns and villages all over the country. The humblest might be a simple row of small dwellings. The larger ones were often in college-like buildings, round courtyards with chapels and wardens' lodgings. Two substantial examples are Abbott's Hospital, founded by the Archbishop in his native Guildford in 1619, and a grand gateway in the Tudor tradition, and Whitgift's Hospital in Croydon, founded by another Archbishop, together with a school, in 1596. The brick-built courtyard of the latter is still a home for old people, right in the centre of modern Croydon. Can't vouch that that is still true. Having survived successions of councillors and developers who threatened it with road schemes and redevelopments. But the school founded at the same time, which was endowed with a piece of agricultural land nearby, is now a wealthy establishment, thanks to the unmanageable increased value of its endowed property when it was sold 3.5 centuries earlier. The making of English towns. What are we doing to this world? I have a lot of history books, and people tell me that our history is not true. I spend not a lot of time, but I have sat and thought about that. My friend Guy Anderson's written extensively about this. He says he's done 10 years of research, 10 or 20 years, can't remember now. He says there was a great reset in 1776. He says that the adults were wiped out, the children were the replacement people, grown up, so they didn't know what happened in the past. He says that the 1,000 years have been added to the calendar that never happened. I don't know how I feel about any of that. He's, you know, he's got evidence and stuff, but I don't know. There's a lot of stuff out there which seems to me to have been put out there to distract people from really what's going on. But then, who knows? At the end of the day, you can only go by your own personal experience. And even then, you can't trust that, can you? Which in a way sort of tells you that nothing is really true. As I said yesterday, was it yesterday? I think I said it yesterday. Everything is experienced through your mind. Because you can't get at real things or supposedly real things. And everybody's going to be having a completely different experience of life. And whilst we can sort of agree on certain narratives just to get us through life or explain things, does it really make it true? That's a philosophical point for another day. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon.